My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
A major dam is destroyed in Russian-occupied Ukraine, threatening hundreds of thousands of people with mass flooding.
Both sides are blaming each other, so there's a lot of disinformation and fog of war going on.
Plus, persistent inflation pushes Australia's central bank to hike interest rates.
Inflationary pressures are proving more stubborn than the RBA and other central banks like the Federal Reserve or the Bank of England would like.
And a former ByteDance executive claims that China's Communist Party accessed TikTok user data. It's Tuesday, June 6th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A major dam and power plant were destroyed in Russian-occupied Ukraine early this morning, with both Kyiv and Moscow trading blame for the incident, which has caused serious flooding and put thousands of homes at risk. The Journal's Matthew Luxmore is in Kyiv and following this developing story for us, and he joins me now with the very latest. Matthew, could you situate this dam for us geographically within Ukraine and tell us what we know at this point about what happened there?
The dam is essentially in a place that separates Ukrainian and Russian-held territory, and it's a very, very critical object of infrastructure in the region, supplying water not only to the region, also to Crimea, the peninsula that Russia annexed in 2014, and also to the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, which is Europe's largest. The Ukrainian authorities have already announced a massive evacuation from lots of settlements in the northern part of Kherson region that they control. They're warning that water levels are rising very, very fast, and we can see that from video footage that's being released from that area at the moment. And that includes the major regional capital of Kherson, which has hundreds of thousands of residents and will most likely be subjected to severe flooding in the coming hours if it isn't already. So it's quite a serious and very, very fluid situation at the moment.
And do we know who is responsible for this?
Yeah, there's obviously very conflicting reports. Both sides are blaming each other. Plenty of video going around that turned out to be actually months old. So there's a lot of disinformation and fog of war going on. One theory is that the plant simply didn't hold out because Russia had allegedly mined it. It had been shelled repeatedly. There has been fierce fighting around the hydroelectric power plant there in recent months. Not so much recently, but when Ukraine was staging a major offensive that was ultimately successful to retake the northern part of Kherson region, the plant also came under major pressure. And the water levels there have been rising quite substantially in recent weeks as well, prompting experts to sound alarm bells. So it's possible that it simply didn't hold out. It's possible that Russia blew it up in order to try and prevent Ukrainian forces from advancing in the area. It's also possible, as Russia claims, that Ukraine was responsible for this to flood Russian fortifications and defensive lines there. But at the moment, it's quite unclear. We're trying to piece together what actually happened.
All right. But what we do know is that this dam supplies water to Crimea as well as to a major nuclear plant, right? What are the risks there?
So the Russian authorities who control Crimea, they're downplaying the impact of this on the water supply in Crimea. And I think we're yet to see how serious that will be, and it likely will be quite substantial as well. As far as the nuclear power plant is concerned, Ukrainian authorities and indeed the International Atomic Energy Agency have said that there is no immediate risk to nuclear safety at the plant because all of the six reactors at the plant are in so-called cold shutdown mode, which means that they require less water to keep running, and the cooling pool at the plant has enough water to keep operations going for some time. But obviously, if the water in the reservoir of the Novokakhovka plant is substantially diminished, that will obviously, in the long term, quite seriously affect the operations of the plant as well. But for the moment, officials say there is no serious risk to nuclear safety there.
And Matthew, is it possible this incident could have any effect on this long-awaited Ukrainian military counteroffensive?
There's a lot of speculation at the moment by defense analysts. Russia has been fortifying its positions along the southern part of the front line and indeed also in the east. And a huge flood of water that predominantly affects the area south of the Dnipro River. So the part of Kherson region that Russia controls is likely to simply wash away Russian fortifications and force its troops to move much further south. So that obviously places their defensive lines in a precarious position. On the other hand, a huge expansion of the river there makes it much, much harder for Ukrainian forces to cross the river to try and take back the southern part of the Kherson region, as Ukrainian officials have claimed as one of their priorities. So I think for both sides, this is not a beneficial situation.
And finally, Matthew, this dam incident comes after Russia has claimed that Ukraine's military has escalated attacks in recent days to their most intense level in months, which is sparking speculation whether we have now seen the start of this long-awaited Ukrainian counteroffensive after all. What can you tell us about that?
Well, Ukraine certainly won't admit that this is the start of the counteroffensive, because it's been talking for a long time about the importance of silence around its operations. I think the absolute least we can say is that there's been a huge step up in Ukrainian offensive operations. And obviously, if Ukraine sees that it can break through those positions, then it's quite likely to kind of opportunistically exploit those openings. Or we may be seeing small operations that may function as a kind of decoy. So they're attacking in the east and then they push through with a major counteroffensive in the south. But at the moment, there's been a big step up in fighting, and it seems like this will only escalate in the days to come.
That was The Wall Street Journal's Matthew Luxmore in Kyiv. Matthew, thank you so much, as always.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, Australia has hiked interest rates, with its central bank predicting more increases on the horizon. So could that affect the Fed's thinking ahead of its rate meeting next week? We've got that story and much more after the break.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Australia's central bank has this morning raised interest rates to their highest level since early 2012, as policymakers there try to combat high inflation. It was the Reserve Bank of Australia's 12th rate hike in just over a year, and the RBA warned that further rate increases are likely if inflation remains stubborn. Quinton Webb is the Journal's deputy finance editor, and he joins me now with more on this story. All right, Quinton, so what is the RBA looking at within Australia's economy, leading it down this path of yet more interest rate hikes?
Well, it's effectively a global story, which is just that inflationary pressures are proving more stubborn than the RBA and other central banks like the Federal Reserve or the Bank of England here in the United Kingdom would like. And so that has necessitated continuing to tighten policy in Australia.
With potential risks, I suppose, to the nation's economy as a result.
Correct. So one of the issues that is present in Australia is that actually not only do you have a very large housing sector and a lot of mortgage debt, but a lot of households are on adjustable rate mortgages. And so there will be some pass-through effect. A rising proportion of household income will have to be dedicated to debt servicing as policy rates rise. In some ways, that makes what's happening in Australia a little bit more similar to what's happening in the UK than what's being observed in the United States.
So does that mean the RBA's decision here doesn't necessarily foretell anything about what the US Federal Reserve might do? Of course, they are meeting next week to make their interest rate move.
I think the widespread assumption at the moment is that the Federal Reserve will hold steady at the next meeting and then could continue to raise their rate a little bit further in the coming months. I don't think there's a direct read across in that what the RBA does is unlikely to directly affect the Fed's thinking, but it does show that global central banks are willing to stay the course, if you like, in order to conquer inflation.
Quinton Webb is the Wall Street Journal's deputy Europe finance editor. Quinton, thanks so much.
Thank you.
A former executive at TikTok owner ByteDance is alleging in a new legal filing that a committee of China's Communist Party members accessed the data of TikTok users in Hong Kong in 2018. The allegations in Yin Tao Yu's complaint are part of a wrongful dismissal lawsuit that he filed against ByteDance last month in San Francisco Superior Court. ByteDance says it vigorously opposes what it believes are baseless claims and allegations in the former executive's complaint. This comes at a time when TikTok is trying to convince U.S. policymakers that the app is safe for users, amid concerns that the Chinese government could lean on TikTok for data about its users or to promote certain content. Turning to news out of Hollywood now, actors have authorized their union to call a strike should negotiations break down with studios and other power players. The Screen Actors Guild and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, whose members include Netflix, Walt Disney, Warner Brothers Discovery, and Paramount Global, are due to start talks tomorrow. The strike authorization by actors comes as directors have reached a tentative deal with Hollywood studios. Journal Entertainment reporter Joe Flint says the pact is due to be submitted today and is being closely watched across the industry.
This deal comes while the Writers Guild of America is entering its sixth week of a strike against the alliance. The significance of the Directors Guild reaching a deal is that it may put more pressure on the writers to come to terms. The DGA got what it believes to be a historic deal out of the alliance, including increases in wage and benefits and global streaming residuals as well, including an agreement on artificial intelligence. That's a big issue with the writers. There's a lot of fear and concern about the use of AI.
The Writers Guild of America has said that a deal between studios and directors wouldn't lead to an end of its strike. A closely watched case begins in New York today with transgender girls' participation in the female categories of school sporting events up for debate. The case concerns four female high school track and field athletes who are suing a decade-old policy in the state of Connecticut that allows high school students to compete on the team that matches their gender identity. They are arguing that that policy makes it harder for girls to win in their sports when competing against athletes with the physical advantages of male athletes. Here is Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Casisto.
This is one of several court cases moving through the courts around the country dealing with this thorny and combustible issue. Many of the parties involved, both the athletes themselves and the transgender athletes, have already graduated. And so the question, is there a harm that still can be remedied by this court? That said, even though that doesn't itself likely have bigger implications across the country, it is going to be really significant to see these types of cases get review by a high level of court and to get a sense of how judges might come down on this issue.
Attorneys for the Connecticut Association of Schools and other defendants say that the plaintiff athletes have no valid basis for challenging the policy. On tap for today, Britain's Prince Harry is in a UK court to give evidence in a phone hacking case. He and more than 100 other celebrities are accusing journalists at Mirror Group newspapers of hacking personal cell phones to get scoops. And former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is entering the 2024 Republican race for president, with the political moderate planning to focus his campaign on New Hampshire, where independents can vote in primaries. And finally, one advantage of online shopping is the ease of returning things that we don't end up wanting once they're right in front of us. It's one of the reasons why return rates surged during the COVID-19 pandemic, as more consumers shifted to ordering online and frequently bought multiple sizes of the same item to find out what fits from the comfort of home. But returns have now become one of the biggest profit drains for online retailers, with returns management company Narvar estimating that it costs more than $26 for businesses to process every $100 of returned merchandise. And WSJ retail reporter Suzanne Kapner says that is leading e-commerce companies to try and change shopping habits.
Amazon, which kind of set the bar for fast returns, is starting to dial back some of that behavior, showing return rates for products that have very high return rates, kind of to inform customers, hey, a lot of shoppers are returning this item. Maybe you want to think twice before you buy it. Sometimes they're charging a $1 fee if people return an item via UPS when a store is closer, because it's much less expensive for them. In some cases, retailers are saying, just keep it. It's not worth it to us to foot the bill to have this stuff come back to us. I spoke to one retailer that sells dresses online, and they decided to offer discounts to people who promised not to return the item. So anywhere from 10% to 70% off if you agree to keep the item.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.